CFO Radio is the only radio show that explores the passion of today's CFO and examines the innermost thoughts of the financial world, financial perspectives of tomorrow. Welcome to CFO Radio. I'm Lorraine Chilvers.
I'd like to thank our sponsors, Delaney Consulting, LLC, providing financial leadership to fast-growing companies, interim management, and executive placement for the finance function. Visit DelaneyLLC.com and learn why 100% of their clients describe Delaney services as outstanding and excellent. And Financial Executives International, the preeminent association for CFOs and other financial executives. We are sponsored by the Atlanta chapter.
Well, today, Caroline Van Sickle is joining us, and she is one of the founders of a company called Pretty in My Pocket. Caroline, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Well, Caroline, this is a little bit new for us today on CFO Radio. We've not had a startup entrepreneur on the radio show, so we're going to have a different line of questions, and I think it's going to be very exciting for our listeners. And I'll start by an introduction as to how you and I first met. Pretty in My Pocket was the winner of an Atlanta-based investment funding organization called Startup Chicks, and Caroline is one of the founders. So, Caroline, start telling us a little bit, if you would. We normally start the show by asking our guests to give a background of your career. Give us an overview of your degree and your background.
The first 10 years of my career I spent in marketing and advertising and digital and emerging media. I spent some of my time up in New York working for Time Warner, and I actually went back to school for my MBA at Emory University. And in fact, at Emory is when Pretty in My Pocket was born. I was in my last semester of my master's program when the idea came to me for Pretty in My Pocket.
Wonderful. And so what was your first job? Was it delivering newspapers? What was it?
Oh, it's funny you ask. And I can't believe that I can actually remember this. But it was, I was 15 and I worked at it wasn't a Barnes & Noble back then, but it was a bookstore that later Barnes & Noble purchased. So I worked in retail at a bookstore.
So what did you learn from there? Were you behind the counter? Were you taking cash?
Yes and yes, and doing boring arrangements of shelving books. Oh, that was awful. Now I have a Kindle, so I keep all my books on there, which I usually don't go into a bookstore. But, I mean, I think I've always been a voracious reader, and so that was my interest in working there. But I think I just learned work ethic, starting, you know, to work, even though, you know, I was still in high school, but I would have to ride my bicycle to this little bookstore. But I feel that my parents have always instilled a very strong work ethic, and that was just the beginning of it.
Well, in terms of beginnings, let's talk a little bit about this. You've been an employee and through the ranks as some manager level with some very large corporations. You mentioned certainly a Fortune, perhaps 500 company. What gave you the impetus to take the path to entrepreneurship? Did you have friends, family, mentors that were entrepreneurs, or is this some idiotic thought that you came up with on your own?
I would have to say, Lorraine, my stepdad is an entrepreneur, and he's inspiring. He was actually my first, he gave the seed money to Pretty in My Pocket, and he truly believed in us. So he was inspiring for me. But also, you know, out of corporate America, having worked at Time Warner and Turner within Time Warner, I recognized that my skill set and almost my purpose and life and what my work would be wasn't being fulfilled in corporate America. You know, you can take some some of these tests they have you take in business school, like Berkman or these personality tests. And, you know, I feel as though I'm in alignment being an entrepreneur with what my skill set is from an innate, natural perspective. I think it was imminent for me to become an entrepreneur. I just didn't know it would be this early.
So you're doing a degree, you're doing your MBA, and Emory certainly is one of the top-rated schools for the MBA program in the world. And was it Emory that did you have some particular exercises or projects as part of your degree that were entrepreneurial-based?
Yes, I took an entrepreneurial class. It was my last class that I took in business school. So in that class, we worked on everything from financial modeling to business plans to actually presenting the ideas of our groups to investors while we were in school.
And I will say, having seen your currently developed business plans, it's probably one of the best that I've seen. So kudos to you putting your heads down and the team that helped you get there. Well, let's talk a little bit about the pretty in my pocket. Typically, we don't have all-out encompassed promotion for the organization, but I'd like to give you that opportunity. Certainly, you are looking for investment, and there may be somebody listening from CFO Radio that potentially would be interested. So blast us with who and what Pretty In My Pocket is. What is your product or service?
Well, Pretty In My Pocket is essentially, we like to say that we're revolutionizing the way women shop for beauty products. And we are a mobile application which allows women to barcode scan in beauty products and get ratings and reviews while she's in the store. So through our mobile application, we send push and pull notifications to our Pretty In My Pocket or PRIMP subscribers.
And you said PRIMP?
Her into the store.
PR from Pretty, and then In My Pocket is the IMP. I like that.
Yes, and we call our subscribers PRIMPers.
Lovely.
So our main mission, truly, with this mobile shopping guide is to encourage foot traffic into the retail location.
And do you have any specific alignments with makeup or product-based companies, or are you looking for those kinds of alignments?
We are looking, always looking for those alignments. We do have a couple on board right now, and they're local. And we're test marketing the concept in order to mitigate risk in Atlanta first, for our first beta rollout.
Right. And obviously, for purposes of confidentiality, feel free to say names if you feel comfortable, and feel free to withhold them if you can't. We understand certainly the stage, intellectual property, and the opportunities that you have will be key to your growth. So,
so
you have a mobile application. Essentially, you're a software development. You're a technology company, and the product that you have, will the consumer, i.e., the woman shopping, will she pay for the product?
Actually, the product is free. So this is where the marketing and advertising piece comes in. It's going to be our revenue streams come from sponsorships from cosmetic companies or retailers. So we want to make sure that the application itself is free and that it's downloaded by as many people as possible, so that, you know, when we do get sponsors, that they'll be able to speak to as many people as possible.
Great. And so essentially, advertising and sponsorship revenues will be your income stream.
Yes, indeed. And we also, even though we're not leading with this, we will have push and pull notifications in the form of curated deals. And there's going to be a kickback rate on those deals but it's nothing like a Groupon or a Living Social or anything like that. It's more of a it's just a pretty deal to get a consumer to try a product that hadn't been on her radar before. She doesn't pay for the coupon up front, and the coupon can sometimes be the driver that either drives her to purchase or brings her into the store.
So how does that consumer hear about you? Do you have a website?
We have a website. It's prettyinmypocket.com. And we also have a blog, which is prettyinmypocket.tumblr.com.
Wonderful. And is it a subscriber based? Let's say I went to prettyinmypocket.com and wanted to find out about you. Is there a logon with a password and ID so that you capture the individual's name and details?
Absolutely. That's a huge piece, Lorraine. I'm glad you brought that up, because what we are doing is creating a huge database of user preferences and user phenotype information so that we have a smarter database, and we have a ton of information about the products that our primpers use so that they can be more effectively marketed to.
I love that term, primpers. So do your primpers get primped? Is that the idea?
They primp out.
They primp out.
That's what we got. Primp out.
I love that. I love that. So I could potentially see that there'd be primp parties.
Oh, you bet. We were just talking about this the other night with our PR contact and our head of marketing. We are planning primp out events where individual women share what's in their beauty bag. And this is an opportunity for us to learn more about our potential users, but it's also an opportunity for us to test usability of how they would add products to their bag onto their mobile device.
Wonderful.
So not only is it a reminder of what they use, but it's also a sharing mechanism. So when you think about how women shop for beauty products, it's a very social experience, how they talk about the beauty products.
Tell us a little bit about that, Caroline, because for purposes of the listenership, Delaney Consulting is one of the mentors to your organization through Startup Chicks, and I know a fair bit of background in terms of what it is that you're doing and so forth. But tell us a little bit, if you will, about that process.
Well, so we know that women, the number one reason why women will change their beauty buying behavior is if a friend gives them a product recommendation. So what we've built into the software platform of Pretty in My Pocket is the easiest way to share products. And you can share while you're actually shopping, but you can also add all of your primped out products, all of the products that make you pretty, into your virtual makeup bag. And then you can also share all the products in your virtual makeup bag with friends in your network. So, not only are we going to have user-generated ratings that help women shop for products when they barcode scan in a product, but what we found in our focus groups is that the most effective form of word-of-mouth advertising is, of course, from a close friend. So we shrink her network so that she's connected to her close friends so she can get recommendations, beauty advice, etc., from her close friends through the Pretty in My Pocket platform.
Fabulous. And let's perhaps start talking numbers. We are certainly a finance-focused show. Can you say on air how much investment that you're looking for?
We actually are coming in at two stages. So the amount of money that we're looking for is about $800,000, but we want to start with a $250,000 investment so that we can test market Atlanta, and then from there to go national is what we would like for the balance to be. So considering I forgot the term of what it's kind of the cramming down of angel investment, we'd like for that investor, the initial $250,000 investor, to also be our investor on the
On the second round. Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
And in that regard, are you looking for one investor of $250,000? Do you think potentially it could be one of these corporations that perhaps is within the industry, or is it likely to be maybe an entrepreneur who just has an affiliation for the product and the market in which you play?
I think it's going to be the latter. And the reason why is because location-based, GPS-targeted, mobile shopping assistance is so new that would have to take a visionary entrepreneur to recognize the strength of the idea and the viability of the product. I think that the retailers or perhaps the cosmetic manufacturing companies, they could be potential partners or, say, a content provider, and that would be an exciting partnership. But sometimes I think that they have their own brand plays, so they want to have their own mobile application that's branded especially for their product or their message, et cetera. So it depends. I mean, we want a smart partnership. We'd like for someone to, you know, speak their wisdom into our company. We are a group of young, bright girls, but we would love to partner with somebody who is willing to not only write a check, but be involved from an advisory perspective, because I think that has a ton of value.
Well, let's talk a little bit about two aspects of the people side of the business. It's very key for startups to have as best and credible an executive team as possible. So we'll talk a little bit about that. But also in the stages of growth that you're in, it's also very important to have what I would call a board of advisors. So let's talk. Maybe let's start with the executive team. Who's on your executive team and what skill sets do they bring to the table?
We have, well, myself, I'm the CEO and the founder, and then we've got a gal, her name is Selma Syrian. She's a CMO, and she has 18 years experience in marketing and digital advertising. And we also have a girl who, her name is Susan O'Weager. She is a business development. She actually works for an RFID software development company right now. And we also have, we're partnering with a development team, pretty in my pocket actually, and this may be a parlay into another conversation, but we had an excellent developer who had to leave pretty in my pocket because the company that he was working on got funded.
Well, that's great news for him or her. I guess her.
Great news for him, absolutely. Okay. But we, you know, this is one of the snags in a startup is that you have to be agile enough and have already cultivated relationships with other development teams so that you can pick up wherever, you know, the other developer left off. And luckily we had a mind enough to do that.
Wonderful. Well, who do you have in terms of surrounding you with your board of advisors? You mentioned that your stepfather was perhaps an early on advisor to you.
Yes. So Michael Loya, he's an entrepreneur in town. He's been in real estate, so he's definitely on the advisory board. And then we also have Wayne Pace, who was the former CFO of Time Warner, on our advisory board. We have Leah Rao, who is a finance director at Estee Lauder on our board of advisors, as well as Jennifer Bonnet as a technology advisor. And Jennifer Bonnet is the founder of Startup Chicks. And she's also the founder and of Nexpense. And she's a serial entrepreneur, actually, in Atlanta.
Wonderful. And that's certainly the capacity that I got to meet you.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Wonderful. So what type of investment you're looking for? Have you even gone down the path of looking to a bank or a financial institution?
We haven't gone to a bank or financial institution. It's more been individuals and groups of investors.
And starting with friends and family and then taking the next step out from there?
Yeah, so, I mean, just like I feel as though there's a certain path. I mean, you start with friends and family obviously in the first round, and that's what we've done. And the next step is going to be more of an angel. And so I think that that's actually coming fairly soon. After this week, we've had some excellent meetings, and there's someone who's very interested and pretty in my pocket, so we could have some good news coming down the pipe soon.
That's fabulous. And mm-hmm. What particular challenges have you met? You talked a little bit about technology and the person that was essentially developing the software for the mobile app. Maybe let's step back and take that a little bit more broadly. What specific challenges have you had in the 2 years of starting up the business?
Oh, gosh, Lorraine, there's just so many. I mean, if I weren't passionate about this, I wouldn't be able to survive. But it's almost as if I've burned the ships. So there's no going back. But, you know, the challenges, I welcome them because it makes us a stronger team and a stronger company. But there are challenges every step of the way, whether it's the developer leaving, you know, having to kind of start over with another developer. There's turnover costs associated with that. We've had a similar turnover issue with our designers. And I would recommend, you know, for entrepreneurs that, you know, for these individual contractors that you may hire out for a beta, give them skin in the game or have them put skin in the game so that they're a little bit more tied to the successful outcome of the project instead of you just paying them hourly, which allows them to get out of the contract in a 30-day period. But, you know, that's a challenge, but the great thing is that and we've been extremely blessed to have somebody that we've known waiting to pick up where the first developer left off or to pick up where the other designer left off. And I think, you know, there's also a challenge in managing the process when we don't have an office. We work out of my home office. And, you know, as an entrepreneur, you know, you're bootstrapping every single thing. So you have to be creative with everything that you do. I mean, we run our own focus groups because we have the expertise of our CMO and some of our advisors instead of paying $1,500 each time we do a focus group. I have interns that are not paid and who do excellent work for me. I mean, there are so many creative ways that you can increase productivity, mitigate, you know, some of the risk and the turnover costs associated with just being a business. But you kind of take it and roll with it, and you try to be as resilient as possible throughout the process.
Sure. And in that regard, talking about process and advisors and such, I mm-hmm. always advise a new startup company to have two particular aspects within their group beyond industry expertise, one of which is go get yourself the best lawyer that you can afford, and the second is go affiliate with some people, certainly one advisor on your team, if not more, that has very strong financial acumen. So mm-hmm. talk a little bit about the legal setup and so forth and the financial mm-hmm. Setup. Certainly the financial aspects of your business plan have been very strong.
Well, I'll start with legal. We actually lucked out with our team. Our legal team, it's they're a local group out of Atlanta, Sayevich Law Group, and Allie, actually, Sayevich, works particularly on Pretty in My Pocket, and they have been amazing, wonderful group of people. And then from the, you know, from a financial perspective, you know, we have Wayne Pace, who was the CFO of Time Warner, and he's extremely well-versed in you know, not only finances, but he worked for one of the biggest, well, the biggest media organization in the world. That, you know, their main purpose for being is advertising. And that's exactly, I mean, essentially PrettyMyPocket is a marketing and advertising platform. And so he comes with just immense credibility and advice. And, you know, certainly he comes from the more corporate end of the spectrum, but he's, I feel as though, you know, from a financial acumen standpoint, we couldn't have gotten anyone better on the board.
That's fabulous. So let's talk about some of the successes that you've already achieved, and certainly winning the Startup Chicks competition is one of those. Talk to us about some of the other successes, some of which may have been not necessarily competition-based, but internal.
Oh, gosh. I mean, it's just one of those things. I remember talking to Michael Tavani, who founded Scout Mob, and I talked to him kind of during the early days of Pretty in My Pocket. And he said, "Don't forget to celebrate the small successes. You know, whether it's actually getting the funding, the financing, or figuring out CSS code on a Tumblr blog. I mean, there's big and small things that keep me going every day. From a success that we had the other day, our intern was here." Hayden Gray, and she is an incredibly bright student from UVA. We couldn't figure out some of the CSS code on Tumblr to make it appear, you know, because our website right now is just a splash page, and so our Tumblr page acts as our website for right now. And so there was something incredibly important that we needed to change, and I couldn't get in touch with the developer. So she gets in there and starts messing around with the HTML code and figures out how to make the changes that we need. I mean, that made us dance around the house for 10 minutes because we were so excited.
That's exciting.
So that's one, but that's a small success. The other, maybe a bigger one, we, through Startup Chicks, that got us on a stage at Startup Riot, and which, you know, that kind of put us on the stage in the Atlanta startup community for particular investors and angels to take a look at us. So that got us a lot of meetings. So that was a huge win. Startup Riot was, gosh, I think it was in February. And that also put us on CNN.com. We were featured as a company, up-and-coming, successful company on CNN.com. And then, you know, there are other ones. There's tons of, you know, you can enter Pretty in My Pocket in a ton of, you know, competitions, pitch competitions. But, you know, I've opted out of a handful of them because, you know, we still have to run a business. You know, there's only so much time that you have. But there was one in particular called Springboard that we were chosen for first round to present up in New York City. And that was quite exciting, because that kind of expanded and broadened our horizons. Not only, you know, we had been pitching to angels and investors in Atlanta, but being up in New York, that opened us up to investors in New York.
Fabulous. And so what is fundraising like, given today's economy? We are 2011, essentially, from the Atlanta perspective, in terms of employment and unemployment statistics, we're still lower than the average on a state-for-state basis. And the Southeast Atlanta isn't particularly well known for venture capital fundraising, although there are a significant number of Fortune 1000 and Inc. 500 companies here, you know, that have wealthy investors that potentially could be on that investment stream. What are you finding in terms of fundraising given today's economy?
Well, it's, you know, I feel that it's been, let's just say, so Atlanta, there are a lot of people in Atlanta who made a lot of money off of real estate. You know, Atlanta is not a Silicon Valley by any stretch of the imagination. And so if you are to present your idea in Atlanta, you know, some of the guys that have made their money from banking or real estate. You know, there's skepticism in investing in something that they don't know about, in an industry they're not as aware. But then there are other companies in Atlanta and entrepreneurs in the tech space that have money. And, you know, quite frankly, I think that the people that are potential investors, they've held on to a lot of cash, even, you know, through this bad economy. So I think they're looking for investment opportunities, and they've been waiting for it to open up. I think that it's kind of softened to where people are starting to pull out their checkbook. I mean, I feel as though I hear of people in the entrepreneurial world, some of my peers, they're getting checks written. And you know what? It's interesting, Lorraine. There are a lot of creative ways to raise not just money, but resources. So, for example, I heard about a company that ended up partnering with a smaller development and kind of marketing and advertising firm, and they did a deal where they traded equity for resources. So even if there are, you know, if investment dollars are somewhat dry in some areas, there's always a way to skin a cat. There's a solution out there. If you're meant to be an entrepreneur and your company is supposed to live and have a purpose, you know, I feel in the power of the universe finding, you know, the right investor or the right resources so that, you know, your company can live.
Absolutely. And in the early stages when cash is tight, any kind of what I would describe bartering is a very useful tool, and certainly bartering and Absolutely. Giving the opportunity for equity is one of the key barter tools that you have. Have you found people interested in terms of taking equity in respect of, in lieu of pay?
Yes. You know, I think the best case scenario is a hybrid where you pay cash and, you know, you give equity at the same time. But, you know, everyone says to be really close to the vest, don't give out equity like it's candy. And I absolutely agree with that. Absolutely. But, you know, if it's, you have to hedge your bets and weigh the pros and the cons. I mean, if you don't have cash as an entrepreneur and all you have is equity, then sometimes in order for you to survive, you have to give out equity in order to get to the next step. But hopefully you're able to raise the seed money to pay for, you know, at least a beta that can get you to the next, you know, level of fundraising. But I do think that you should be very prudent. Pretty in My Pocket has been extremely prudent with allocating equity to anyone, just because we want to have it for when the true investment dollars come down. And we also, you know, we have a vision for Pretty in My Pocket, so we want to protect that vision as well.
Sure. So what's it like first time that you get in front of those potential investors? Obviously, business school has prepared you in some regard, but speak to us in terms of the preparation of the business plan and then releasing that in terms of standing in front of that prospect investor and putting your story forward.
Well, you know, the business plan was primarily for me. You know, oftentimes investors don't even look at the business plan. They do a weight test. They may thumb through it, but I think investors invest on oftentimes the individual. They probably do, you know, they want to look through all of the financials, and the modeling is extremely important. And I think that the business plan for Pretty in My Pocket for our team was to truly hone in on the core functionality, what our offering was, why it's an added value, and why there's a white space in the market for us, what the competition is. It just helped us explore all of the necessary elements of, you know, becoming a business, answering a lot of questions so that we could, you know, prove our reason for being. not only to investors, but really to ourselves. And it made us go through all the thoughts of, you know, building a business. And then, you know, from getting in front of investors, we would do, you know, the quintessential 10 to 11 page deck, get it done in 10 minutes. And really what you're supposed to be doing in that first round is, or that first, you know, 10-minute pitch is getting the second meeting. And I think a lot of investors that we've talked to, they have a gut reaction to whatever they're hearing. And if their gut says that, yes, I want to go to the next meeting, then they start combing through all of, you know, your spec documentation, your, you know, how are you going to reach customers, your business plan, your business, your financial model. I think it's a lot of the investors we've talked to, yeah, it's a gut reaction.
So have you found there were any particular unusual questions that came from your investors? Anything that surprised you and said, wasn't really expecting that?
Yeah, I actually, tons of questions like that, actually. But I think one, I'm sitting there in this huge boardroom and, you know, one of the guys in one of the chair, in these big leather chairs just looked me dead in the eye and he said, "What makes you think, Caroline, that you can do this? That's all I want to hear right now." And it was just, it came off as an extremely personal question. And it was almost as if he and I were the only ones in the room, the way that he looked at me and asked me this question, the tone in his voice, everything. And it was in that moment that I knew that I had everything that I needed to accomplish pretty in my pocket for this company to launch and for it to be successful, for it to make money. I looked at him dead in the eye and said, "I know that pretty in my pocket is supposed to live. I know I'm the person who is supposed to bring it into this world. And we've done all of the due diligence. Now it's time to take a check and get to work, because we've done every single piece of analysis that we can do up to this point. It's time to dive in now."
That's fabulous. And one thing that I take from your message there, Caroline, is that often the first time entrepreneur doesn't realize that it is so much a majority part of the investor's decision that he or she as an investor will invest in you based on you, what you bring to the table, your previous history or experience, to what extent, whether it's been corporate or otherwise, and the successes that you have and the capabilities that you take it to the next level, because it's all about people. Businesses are really all about people. Whether you provide a product or a service, it's the people that will make it happen.
Yes, I really believe that. And we are good people. I have to tell you, Lorraine, we can do this. I am so excited about Pretty in My Pocket. We are so close that I go into these retail locations and I visualize women utilizing Pretty in My Pocket in these retail locations. I see it happening. I see our brand coming alive. I see people wanting to work for us for free right now as interns. It's almost as if everything is naturally unfolding, and I haven't had to white knuckle this process. I've had to put my head down and work very hard, but it hasn't been something that's been forced. It's happened more fluidly, almost as if it's meant to be. It's just been unfolding.
Well, that's fabulous. And I know that you'll go far. Certainly, you have a wonderful service that you're providing out there. Unfortunately, Caroline, we're coming to the end of the show, but we have one final question that we ask all of our guests, and that is, what is your CFO tip of the month? From the perspective of being an entrepreneur and coming with a marketing background, what's your CFO tip of the month?
Be as frugal as possible. And I feel as though, you know, that's a life lesson even, you know, as an individual and from a personal standpoint. But, and I think being frugal also means, you know, you're being as wise as you possibly can, given the gift of the investment dollars that you've been given. And being frugal means being resourceful. So finding other, you know, ways that you can make your money go further. And I think, you know, during this time of bootstrapping, it's almost as if it's meant to be, it's meant to happen in the very beginning so that you will learn and you're reminded more just how important it is to be frugal and to be wise with the gift of investment and money that you're given.
Well, that is a great tip. Thank you so much, Caroline. And from a formal perspective, Caroline Van Sickle, I'd like to thank you for being a guest on our show and sharing your innermost thoughts on the role of certainly the finance and raising capital for an entrepreneurial opportunity.
Well, thank you, Lorraine. It's been a pleasure.
You're welcome. Well, we'd also like to thank our sponsors, Delaney Consulting, providing CFOs and controllers to Fortune 1000 companies and small businesses alike. For information about Delaney's services, go to www.delaneyllc.com. Thanks also goes to Financial Executives International, the preeminent association for CFOs and financial executives. We are sponsored by them and the Atlanta chapter. See their website at www.financialexecutives.org. This and other thought leadership from today's CFO is available right from your computer at cforadio.com. If you are a CFO and would like to be a guest on the show, please contact us via the web. Thanks for listening today to CFO Radio. This is Lorraine Chilvers signing off. Until next time.